Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announces his run for governor. Recent numbers from the U.S. Census shows the number of children without health insurance in Georgia has gone up. And in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination, some Georgians are learning the limits of free speech.
Employees in the private workforce, whether they're in Georgia or elsewhere in the country, do not, generally speaking, have federal First Amendment rights.
Today is Wednesday, September 17th. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger is running for governor. He announced his bid for Georgia's top office in a video released today, where he highlighted his legal fights against former Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams.
I'm a conservative Republican, and I'm prepared to make the tough decisions. I follow the law and the Constitution, and I'll always do the right thing for Georgia, no matter what.
Raffensperger says his platform centers around bringing good-paying jobs, reducing property taxes, and putting parents in charge of education. He'll face Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones, Attorney General Chris Carr, veteran Ken Yasker, and real estate executive Clark Dean in the Republican primary next year. Running for governor as a Democrat, former Republican Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan made his first campaign appearance today in Atlanta after announcing his candidacy on Tuesday, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Duncan, who officially became a Democrat in August, greeted voters and small business owners at Black Coffee Atlanta, a Black-owned cafe. He says he is prepared to answer skeptical voters about his Democratic values and pointed to his involvement in former Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign in 2024.
I've worked as hard as anybody in this state and been as loud as anybody in this state, and that includes anybody in this race, against pushing back against Donald Trump and his toxic, visceral leadership style that's corroding every nook and cranny of this entire country.
Duncan served as lieutenant governor from 2019 to 2023, but did not seek re-election for a second term. Duncan enters an already crowded field that includes five other Democrats. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Two top former officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention today described for U.S. senators an Atlanta-based agency rocked by changes under Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his anti-vaccine advisors. Fired CDC Director Susan Menares and former CDC Chief Medical Officer Deborah Ourey warned the U.S. is becoming a, quote, dangerous place under the new administration. Ourey recalled the shooting at the agency on August 8th, when hundreds of bullets were fired at the building. Authorities accused the gunman of being motivated by anti-vaccine disinformation.
Each bullet was meant for a person, and each of my staff were very traumatized afterwards. I had staff that were covering their kids in the daycare parking lot. I have many that won't speak about vaccines now and remove their names off of papers. They don't wish to present publicly anymore because they feel they were personally targeted because of misinformation.
Georgia U.S. Senators Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff this week said they sent the CDC's acting director a letter demanding the agency's plans to ensure a safe and secure environment as its employees return to work. Recent numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau show the rate of American adults and children who are uninsured has remained largely the same. But a closer look indicates Georgia is among states where the number of uninsured kids has gone up, and federal cuts could exacerbate the issue. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more on the trends.
Between 2022 and 2024, 48,000 kids in Georgia lost health insurance. Medicaid unwinding played a big role in that. In coming years, Georgia will lose millions in federal spending on its Medicaid program, which could see more kids lose coverage. Then there's the Affordable Care Act. A national increase of kids covered by marketplace plans will likely end with an expected expiration of subsidies. Joan Alger with Georgetown Center for Children and Families says a fear of being deported is also causing families to avoid health care.
We've already heard many anecdotes about children not going to well child or sick visits and other medical appointments as a consequence of this fear.
Already, non-white kids are more likely to be uninsured. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Police have made an arrest in a July auto break-in that two people touring with Beyoncé said resulted in the theft of the singer's unreleased music. Atlanta police said on Tuesday that the suspect is in custody. Jail records do not list an attorney for the suspect, Kelvin Evans. He's charged with entering an automobile with the intent to commit theft. A dancer and choreographer traveling with Beyoncé for her Atlanta concerts told police on July 8th that someone broke into their rental vehicle and stole two suitcases. Police said stolen items included a thumb drive containing Beyoncé's unreleased music, but nothing has been recovered. All right, let's talk a little bit about the weather. I've been enjoying it lately. It's been perfect out there temperature-wise, and temperatures are average for September after an unseasonably cool August. But as I'm sure you've noticed, it's been very dry, and that could mean trouble for Georgia's peanut farmers. GPB's Chase McGee has that story.
Some of the earliest leaves are falling across the state, and a lot of Georgia's commodity crops have been harvested. But peanuts are different, and University of Georgia agricultural climatologist Pam Knox says that could spell trouble as dry conditions move closer to a drought.
For one thing, they need rain to fill the pods because you don't want to have the pods half full of nuts. But also, if it's really dry, the ground tends to get really hard, and then it's hard to get those peanuts up out of the ground. Because the ground gets crusty.
She says one thing that could break up a drought is a fall tropical storm. And while the forecast is quiet right now, all the conditions are right for severe storms later in the month. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens cut the ribbon this morning to celebrate the completion of the second phase of a Concourse D modernization project at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. Five new passenger gates will open tomorrow, and Dickens said passengers will be surprised by the transformation of the space.
ATL's passengers will walk along into this larger area, larger gate areas, upgraded restrooms, and spaces that move people more efficiently.
The concourse renovation and widening are part of a $1.3 billion project to be completed in 2029. Some Georgia workers are learning the limits of free speech as they face discipline for social media comments in the wake of the fatal shooting of right-wing influencer Charlie Kirk. Cobb County Schools, Children's Health Care of Atlanta, Delta Airlines, and a piano bar, Savannah Smiles, are among Georgia employers that have either fired or placed on leave employees because of comments related to Kirk's stunning death last week. Here to talk about the intersection of free speech, employment law, and social media is Emory Law Professor Deepa Das Acevedo. Thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Orlando.
First of all, broadly speaking and briefly, where does the law in Georgia come down between protecting an employee's freedom of expression and protecting a company's reputational integrity?
So, one thing that is important to remember as a baseline is that employees in the private workforce, whether they're in Georgia or elsewhere in the country, do not, generally speaking, have federal First Amendment rights at work. So you can be fired for something that you said on socials, at a football game, and so on. There might be some limitations on that, but we don't really have any of those limitations strongly applicable in Georgia.
Is there any difference between categories of workers in relation to the rights they have? For instance, perhaps back-of-the-house dishwasher versus corporate leader or public versus private workers?
What matters more for analyzing employment rights, including speech rights at work, isn't so much whether you hold a particular role, but the type of worker you're classified as being. So are you an employee or are you an independent contractor? That makes a difference, legally speaking. And one of the differences that you mentioned matters a lot. Are you a public sector employee or are you a private sector employee? Public sector employees, people who work for some branch of the government or some state actor, do have some free speech rights at work, but private sector employees don't.
What about academics? We always hear about academic freedom, but it's shaky.
Well, this is getting close to home, but academic freedom, generally speaking, is not considered a legally enforceable right. It's an industry norm. It is something that universities as employers and scholars, faculty as employees, believe is necessary in order for professors to do the work that they were hired to do. But it's not the same thing as saying that you have a constitutional or statutory right to engage in certain types of work and that you can bring a lawsuit if you were fired for engaging in those types of permissible speech.
Now, GPB has not seen the social media posts in question by the employees of Cobb County Schools, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, or the other employers that I mentioned earlier, but they're clearly unacceptable to the employers. How can companies and organizations define unacceptable speech and train workers to understand what's expected of them, especially in politically sensitive and emotionally charged situations?
I think it's really important for employers first to have their own idea of what they consider acceptable boundaries of speech, particularly when employees are speaking in a private capacity. If you don't have a sense of that as an employer, you can't possibly communicate that effectively to your workforce. So first, employers need to kind of settle on what they are willing to tolerate and what they feel is too dangerous to their business for them to be able to tolerate. Once they've done that, I think it is important to have clear, consistent communication and training for employees in advance. This is not something that you want to be solving after the fact. This is a kind of shared norm that you want to establish within the workplace in advance of specific incidents happening, because we never know when something's going to come up.
Is there any difference in rights workers have between unacceptable speech, that is, celebrating someone's death, racist comments, comments mocking a person's disability or religion, compared to merely political speech, that is, I like Trump, I like Biden? Are there protections for political speech?
The answer is yes and no. For the most part, though, the answer for people who work in the private sector is not really. The content of the speech does not matter so much as the fact that you are, again, either a public sector worker or a private sector worker, or you fall into certain types of classification. Because at the end of the day, what one person considers, you know, political speech that isn't clearly unacceptable and speech that is clearly unacceptable is a subjective decision.
I know an employer cannot fire you because of race, religion, sex, and similarly protected classes. But as you said, they can fire you for political speech. So what about when sort of political topics touch on those protected classes, for instance, like immigration or gender equality or civil rights? Can an employer's discipline in that context be litigated as harassment?
There's certainly the potential that if a speech act intersects with some other grounds for termination that's not legally acceptable, like a adverse employment consequence, being disciplined or being fired because of your race, because of your national origin, and so on, there is certainly the possibility that the employee could litigate that decision. But what's really doing the work there is that other thing. It's not the speech act per se.
So, bottom line, what's your best advice for social media behavior right now, given these divided, tense, and politically fraught moment that we're in?
What this moment is telling us is that, once again, social media is something not to be afraid of, but to be used carefully and intentionally. What you put out there in a moment, in the heat of the moment, is going to stay out there long after you have calmed down or your perspective has shifted. You can't take that back. And so I think that in a moment of extreme strife, extreme hardship, if you feel like you need to, you know, share a thought, express an emotion, find a friend, and do it in person. Don't do it online.
That's Emory Law Professor Deepa Das Acevedo. Thanks for weighing in on this topic. A new report highlights weaknesses in Georgia's response to last year's devastating Hurricane Helene. The Georgia Foundation for Agriculture released the report on Monday. Based on a survey of 147 farmers from 44 counties in Helene's path, the report details widespread system failures, delayed recovery, and unmet needs across agricultural communities. Among its key findings, 88% of respondents were without power for at least 5 days, 60% couldn't connect with 911, and 71% lost access to water for livestock and crops. The foundation says the report underscores the need for ongoing investments in disaster recovery, rural infrastructure, and long-term resilience. U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is ordering Atlanta-based Delta Airlines and Aeromexico to dissolve their longtime partnership because of his concerns that Mexico isn't being fair to U.S. airlines. Duffy said today he's revoking the antitrust immunity that allowed the airlines to price and schedule their flights jointly and share revenue. He says it doesn't make sense to maintain that arrangement as long as Mexico is giving its domestic airlines an unfair advantage through limits it placed on passenger and cargo flights into Mexico City several years ago. The airlines said they're disappointed, but haven't decided whether to challenge the order. The airline dispute is another front in the broader trade war between the U.S. and Mexico. In Georgia sports, the Atlanta Dream and the Indiana Fever will face off in a winner-take-all Game 3 of the first round of the WNBA playoffs on Thursday. The Fever beat the Dream 77-60 on Tuesday night. The victory tied the best-of-three series at 1. Game 3 will take place in Atlanta, which hasn't won a playoff series since 2016. Indiana's last series win came in 2015. And that's it for today's episode of Georgia Today. I invite you to visit gpb.org/news, where you'll find many of the stories that you hear on Georgia Today. We also have a Facebook and Instagram page that you can keep up with GPB News on social media. Send feedback to georgiatoday@gpb.org. We welcome your comments. And take a moment right now to hit subscribe on this podcast if you haven't done so already. It'll help you and it'll help us as well. Once again, thank you for joining us on this episode. I'm Orlando Montoya, and I'll be back again tomorrow with more Georgia Today.